Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Fire Department Network News, FDNNTV.com, and Charlie Johnson, former PIO, Santa Barbara County Fire. And we're talking about the interfaces between the agencies and the news networks and how that all works. And we're going to be talking all things disaster and the interface between the public information and the networks and how that all works.
I'd like to thank you both for taking time to be with us today. We've got kind of an interesting show here today, and that we're talking about the media, and we've also got a camera crew here today, so that we're looking at trying to attach this from different directions.
Documentation.
Thank you very much. Charlie, you used to be the public information officer of the Santa Barbara County Fire Department, and now you're with Carp-Summerlin Fire Department. And I figured that's a great way to start off. What are the problems that you're experiencing today as a public information officer and in getting information out to the public?
Probably the public's demand for immediacy. They want to know the intimate details, not 10 seconds from now, but right now. Mm-hmm. And getting accurate, timely information is still a very difficult activity for us.
But then on the flip side of it is what Barbara's representing, and that's the media itself, the people that are out there actually broadcasting it out. And you're coming from the Southern California area. How frustrating is this for you guys?
It can be very frustrating. The problem is that when you're looking for a PIO, often you can't find them.
Right.
And then if you do find them, a lot of times they don't have the time to deal with you because they're dealing with 100,000 other people.
Right. Well, that's why I thought it'd be kind of fun today to get mm-hmm. both sides of the spectrum together, because the consumer, we know what they want. They just want information, and they want it now. But the process in getting it there now, while the electronics might be there to make that happen, the reality of actually making it happen gets to be a little bit more challenging. So where do we go with trying to make this work? I mean, you guys have been in this business for over 30 years, and here we are today with all this new advanced technology. We've got internet, we got Twitter, we got Facebook, we've got probably close to 2,000 cable network channels, whether they be through satellite or head-in systems or whatever. There's lots of resources out there, and yet getting the information seems to be a challenge. Barbara, that's your side of the street. What do you think?
Well, at times it's easier to get information, and at times it isn't. It's still sometimes very difficult to get in touch with a public information officer. If you do get in touch with them, sometimes they don't have time to talk to you because they're trying to talk to a lot of other people. And I have one fire department that actually, the PIO Twitters, which is nice.
Right.
So you can look on their website and you see his posts and his Twitters about an incident. But a lot of times, because it's Twitter, they're a little bit too short and you don't get all the information you need.
Now, how much do you, in the broadcast side of this, rely on things like Facebook and Twitter?
I'm finding that Facebook is invaluable sometimes, for especially with departments that actually do post a lot. I'll at least get a post to know something's going on, and then I can either call them or go to their website or do whatever I need to do to get more information. But at least it gives me the heads up that it's happening.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
Are you finding that the information is out there more than it used to be? I know in the old days the incident was the paramount. They went out there to take care of, address the incident. The information kind of came out as they could give it to you.
Right.
But has that changed? Do you think that because the public is demanding more and there are so many other outlets, that there's actually more of an incentive for agencies to put that information out there pretty rapidly?
Yes, I think so. I think some are jumping on the bandwagon and some are a little bit slow to do it. But yeah, it is getting out there a little more frequently and a little faster, but unfortunately still I think there's a lag, and mm-hmm. there probably always will be.
We're both entities are challenged. Mm-hmm. The public's demand for immediacy is our greatest challenge. When Barbara's talking about the access to the information officers, there's fewer of them, but there's also fewer reporters out there today, so mm-hmm. we have some very similar challenges. The Twitter stuff, that I think is where most of the folks are starting to go now. They're starting to be proactive. I think in the emergency services, we've been challenged by our information has to be vetted before it can be sent out. And typically the chain of command is the incident commander has to approve it. If you look at agency specific, so any one agency that Barbara might be dealing with, if that PIO isn't constrained with having to go back to the IC and that's the way I operated for almost 24 years.
Right.
I had the ability to speak with what I knew and didn't really have to clear much of anything unless it was very controversial. If you are working a multi-agency incident, then that stops. Everything has to go through the one clearinghouse, which is the incident command.
Correct.
And that in itself slows that whole process down. So we can put out basic information, but details, it's very embarrassing to have somebody say, well, I'm looking at that house burning up on the hill, and yet we haven't got validation back through official channels that we can say that structures have been consumed by the fire.
Yeah, because when I was flying, when I was in the air, I would see that there was maybe, 10, 15 houses gone, and you're still saying no houses have burned. It's like, that's not right, but I understand you have to go through the appropriate channels.
And there's things that are changing today. I think the incident command system is recognizing that this immediacy, we have to be able to get information out faster. So some of those long, drawn-out procedures are getting trimmed back and we are being more expeditious. We're given a little bit more latitude, and it's the direction we're going to have to go. We don't have that luxury anymore of waiting.
There's a couple of things that with information that we've noticed, and that is that there's the people that want to be entertained by the event. The fire's burning. There's all this excitement, and people want to be part of that. They want to witness it. But there's also the part of the public that really needs to know where that fire is, what road is closed, how they can escape. So you have to kind of temper yourself to both those publics, and that's a tricky one. How do you do that? Are you just...
Well, Ted, for my perspective, there is a distinction between the two. And yes, you have to feed both beasts. My priority is always emergency public information, EPI.
Right.
And that's truly what I focus on is what information does this group of public need in order to make informed decisions? As you get into it, I'm going to offer up some human interest stories that feed that entertainment value. But it can't be primary. It has to be a secondary effort. So our focus is always on emergency public information. What do they need to know?
Well, it's usually in the beginning of an incident that people get, they need to know that information. They know where it is, how long it's been burning, where it's going to burn to, what roads are closed, all that stuff. Then gradually you get into the human interest side because you get tired of saying the same thing over and over again. Obviously, the public has got the information that they need to base some decisions on.
Well, and then too, there's always the critical element of public education. You need to take time out to educate the public. And if you can take a graphic example and really put it out there where the public can see it, hear it, and consume it, hopefully in the long run what we're going to get is a better informed and more reactive public.
But do you generally have time to do Twitter, do Facebook, interact with all of the players that are involved? I mean, the time that it takes for one guy to be able to do all this, it's just not there.
Can't do it.
It can't there.
It's not a one-person shop. And, that I learned that lesson early on in my career. I spent 24 years as an information officer. And I think within my first year, I realized I'm one person. There's no way I'm going to do this by myself. So I've always had a cadre of people that I could draw on in emergency incidents to get information.
I grew up listening to Dave DeSoto on KMPC, and in the KMPC station wagons, and KFI had station wagons, KHJ had cars, and they were out there, and the news media went out and got what they needed and brought it back in whatever mechanism they had. That doesn't happen anymore, and when we come back from the break, I'd like to kind of expand on way it used to be. Did it maybe work better with less technology because it was done the old-fashioned way, or does the technology today actually help us or hinder us, I guess is a better way to put that. So this is Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Visiting today with Barbara Brooks, the Fire Department Network News, and Charlie Johnson, PIO with the Carp-Summerlin Fire Protection District and former PIO with Santa Barbara County Fire. Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Folks, I'm Ted Adams. This is Community Alert. My co-host is Mike Williams. We're visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Fire Department Network News, and Charlie Johnson, former PIO for the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. And we're talking about the news and how it's distributed from a couple of different viewpoints. And appreciate you guys being here to share with us.
Well, let's get the abbreviation out because we're tongue-tying ourselves here. It's FDNNTV.com, and there's a variety of videos available on a multitude of different subjects. So this is only just one media. primarily doing fire training and information exchange regarding fire services throughout the state of California and abroad. So it's exciting that we're being able to be a part of that. So getting back into the media thing, we were talking about the way it used to be versus what it is today. Charlie, what do you think? Because you span that whole thing from the way it used to be to what it is today. What do you think? Is it better today or worse?
Wow. I'm not sure how to answer that one, Mike. You know, there was a lot of successes in the early years, and it was very dramatic. But again, the immediacy, the demand for information and having accurate stuff instantly is creating problems for us. Mm-hmm. When you mentioned about local here, you go back to the days of Dick Williams and KST News and news cruisers, and they had people out actually going to incidents. That doesn't happen anymore today, unless it's a big breaking news story, and then it's your big network news that are doing it.
And then you've got everybody tripping over everybody else.
Yes. So, you know, in some senses, things have gotten more complex and more challenging, and in others, if you go back to the old days, we seem to be a lot more efficient. So technology is both an asset, and it's also a challenge.
But in the old days, you'd get your news once a day. You know, they'd have their 5 o'clock news or whatever it is, and then that would be it. You wouldn't get any updates unless it was radio. Maybe you would catch an update every now and then, but they wouldn't be live.
No, and all the media today is 24/7.
Yeah.
And that's hard to stay competitive with. It's almost as if the public safety agencies have become the source of entertainment for media. It's almost like there's been a role reversal here. And so, and then at the same token, as much as public safety needs to be able to get the information out, there's also this cross demand of public safety providing information because the various media sources are out there looking or starving for information and content, and it's not necessarily there. The old slow news day can be very detrimental these days.
Yeah. Well, I know as a listener, sometimes I'll be like watching television or something and a fire has broken out and I just keep hearing the same thing over and over and over for like an hour. It's kind of like when you watch the police chases. They have nothing to talk about, so they just keep saying the same thing because they're not getting any new information.
Well, you used to fly in the air and you did the news reporting, so you were on the scene. How did that work from your side of the street? And then we'll go over to Charlie and talk about the other side.
Well, like if I covered a fire from the air, I would get the general details from the ground. They would tell me where it was, what it was, if they knew how many acres or whatever. And then basically, I would fill in the rest. I would have to talk about what I'm seeing. I would have to talk about what was burning, where it was burning, which way it was headed. Mm-hmm. And that was basically it. I only had my ground connection. And that was one person that was on the other end of the two-way mic I was talking with.
So that would be at the station? It would be one of your folks?
Yes.
So you had to have, you were almost third party in a process that was taking place. You got to see it, but you didn't necessarily know what was going on.
Right, but I would find out the information, and then I would relay what I see. And sometimes what you see is more important than the information you get from, though you are a reliable source, I know what I'm looking at.
Right.
Correct.
So how do you compete with that, Charlie, on your side of the street where they've got a helicopter, they've got people downtown, they've got their own communication network, they're seeing everything at real time, and yet you're the PIO on the scene who may not necessarily be able to move that fast?
It's a huge challenge, Mike, but again, I guess I would go back to saying that to be successful in the media market today as an information officer, you have to have professional working relationships with all of your media people. And it starts with that relationship and the trust that what you're delivering is accurate and has, you know, impeccable quality to it. The media today, I think one of the things that's worked well for us is they provided pictures to us and said, can you tell us what's going on? Well, now you've got both of us working together. They're seeing something from the sky, but having trouble interpreting it. So Dave Sadecki now for County Fire can tie into helicopter video.
Correct.
And he can give you a running commentary on what's going on. So that's a huge enhancement. And now when you've got that person that has that kind of knowledge and they can converse with the reporter, whether they're in the air or on the ground, the public is getting a true picture of what's going on, a much truer picture. We can't be everywhere. So if we can look at their video or the video coming from, say, a County Fire helicopter, now you've really completed a loop. I think that's one of the best technologies that's come out.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Part of why I wanted to do this show and approach this from this angle was to try to share with the public as a whole how complicated something so simple really becomes. I mean, if you just stand out there and look at it with your own two eyes, there's no process involved. But in order to get that information to you via television or radio, look at all the resources that have to be implemented and the subsequent costs associated with that. I mean, for a radio station to run helicopters is a big expense.
Right.
And I'm not sure everybody's doing that anymore.
No, a lot fewer are doing that now.
So how are they dealing with it now?
Well, I think they're just basically they call the PIOs and they get the information that way, or they get it off the internet or whatever. They're costs are being cut every which way,
mm-hmm.
and things are changing a lot. And as far as what we do is a little different because it's on the internet. And so we can be pretty much almost in real time at times with certain stories.
Well, it's interesting.
But we don't really cover breaking news. That's not necessarily what we do.
Well, it gets to be challenging. But it's interesting you talk about that because Charlie and I were at a situation over the weekend. We were meeting with some pretty high-placed folks with NBC Television out of New York. And we started talking about this media stuff because both of us have a long-term interest and passion about this. And we're trying to find some reasonable solutions. And it was curious because we were talking of folks that were involved in broadcast network news out of NBC in New York. And so we're talking about the real network news people here, and they're the producers. And they're talking about their rating levels being down to 11 million people. Well, that's next to nothing when you consider the size of the United States or the world, for that matter, and that they are having significant problems because nobody watches the news anymore. But that doesn't mean they don't want to see it when they want to see it.
People have so many outlets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have so many different things and so many different places you can go at any given time to get any news story you want.
With the slant that you wanted.
Yeah, it's fragmenting. And yes, you can have any different slant you want, too.
Well, I think that's why what you're doing at FDNNTV.com is so exciting, because that's what NBC was saying that things are going to, is internet podcasts, the ability to create things short and inexpensively without all the high production value that goes with it, and putting it out on the internet quickly and safely is the future. And whether that's done on the media side of the street or if it's done through private enterprise or if it's done by the agencies, that's yet to be seen. I know Oxnard City, we've talked about this too, is doing some of their own stuff. Santa Barbara County Sheriff and Fire Department both have the ability to do this. I don't think they've been exploring it much, have they, Charlie?
Well, actually, they have. If you take a look at the county sheriffs, they had a media resource specialist years ago that mm-hmm. was producing video in-house and basically Hollywood quality.
Oh, yeah, Chuck Bell.
Yeah. And then you take a look at the technology that County Fire and the Sheriffs are working on right now with being able to download video from the helicopter to a command post. The PIO for County Fire now has the ability to have that in his vehicle. So, yeah, they're stepping up and trying to meet that need, but it's an expensive proposition.
Well, Ted and I got kind of an experience here during the Hayseseda fire, because we were on the air for 17 and a half hours straight. And we came in here to record a show of Community Alert and walked out, Richard, I don't remember, but the next day we walked out of here. And it was interesting because we had the TVs in here, then we set this place up and we're trying to stay on top of everything that was going on. And it was really challenging, even though you could walk right out of the door of the station here and see what was going on. But the transition to get it down here was really challenging. Now, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, the interesting part of that was that we were able to be on the air and asking people to give us a call and tell us what they thought was going on from their perspective. And we were able to hook up with a couple of, at least one retired fireman who really knew what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And he was right in the middle of the fire. Nobody else could get up there to be in the area that he was in. And he was giving us a really good narrative of where the fire was moving, how fast it was moving, because he had all the terminology and the knowledge to do that assessment work. And it was great, you know. And I think that that's one of the great assets of the radio, talk radio situation, is that we're able to call on the public to give us some information.
Yeah.
And because nobody else is out there really able to do it. And you get the guy that's sitting on top of the fire talking about it.
I found I had that problem on September 11th, that was very difficult to try and get information and to try and get the correct information.
Now, you were in the L.A. metropolitan area
yes.
at that time.
Yes, so I was 3,000 miles away from the incident, but still trying to get the information out, and it was not easy. And you were getting a lot of conflicting reports, and people were a lot of people, I think, were very panicked about what was going on.
Well, rightfully so.
Oh, yeah. And it was very difficult because you want to give the right information, but you don't just want to go out there and say what's going on, but you want to make sure it's right.
Well, I know that during the Hastings Sea to Fire, our experience was that it was very difficult to validate anything. You'd
right.
hear things. Some of it you'd get on the radio. Some of it you'd see on TV or whatever. But to validate, to make sure that it was actually factually yeah. correct, knowing that if you put the wrong information out and something as dynamic as the Hastings Sea to Fire was, that was going to have some negative impact. So we were very careful
well,
of that.
Well, you know mm-hmm. that people are acting on your information. As soon as you know that people are doing life-threatening or life-saving, making decisions about the things that you're telling them, you start becoming a lot more aware of what you're putting out there.
Right.
Well, we learned a lot, but we're up to our next break here. And one of the things I've always learned is to pay attention to our engineer. This is Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Barbara Brooks, and Charlie Johnson. Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Fire Department Network News, FDNNTV.com, and Charlie Johnson, former PIO, Santa Barbara County Fire. And we're talking about the interfaces between the agencies and the news networks and how that all works.
Let's get into some of the training. Charlie and I, and Charlie much longer than I have, been involved in doing some media training and working with new future PIOs on how to interact with the media and the things that the media wants, what the public wants, and in turn, how to best protect and get the information from the agency without exposing them to problems. What are some of the issues that you deal with in those training exercises, principally in trying to obtain information as a PIO?
Mike, the one thing that we're teaching is that you have to have a positive working relationship with the news mm-hmm. media, that you have to view them as professionals doing their job. The days of looking at the media as the adversary, you know, we tossed that out almost 30 years ago. Right. And we think what we're providing to the media and to the public today are highly trained, talented, sharp, quick-thinking information officers. And it's not that we don't end up with an occasional person that gets, say, a little bit frustrated with the media. But for the most part, I think the media are enjoying people who are their advocates, mm-hmm. trying to help them get the story as quickly and as accurately as possible.
Yeah, well, that absolutely helps. I mean, when you have a good working relationship with the PIOs, it makes your job a lot easier.
And that's
makes your job easier, makes my job easier.
And that's the predominant focus, is that you have to have a relationship. You mm-hmm. can't go into this cold. You have to work on it.
Oh, well, yeah. And it takes time.
I know we've talked, we do a simulation tape, we call it Billy Bob, and it's if the media doesn't get information from a public information officer or somebody credible, then they're going to go find somebody to get the information from. Enters Billy Bob, the guy up on the side of the hill picking his teeth with his credit card with his summary of what he feels is going on.
And then we're in a defensive mode trying to overcome that.
How does the media address those kinds of things? What do you do when you're sitting there on live television or live radio and you realize you don't have the kind of quality person that you thought you did?
Luckily, I've never had that problem.
Yeah,
but
back out quickly.
Yeah, I would think you just try to gracefully exit that as quickly as possible. But yeah, luckily I've not had that problem. But I would imagine that could be very embarrassing.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of that during the Hastings Sea to Fire. We had people mm-hmm. calling in, and it became readily apparent that they weren't really seeing what they thought they were seeing, or they were taking what they were seeing and putting their own personal opinion or conjecture on it, and it was becoming up erroneous. And it was a challenge for 17.5 hours to deal with that.
Well, Mike, you had to deal with that, and I think that's one of the greatest frustrations for all the PIOs today, for public safety agencies anyway. There's so many people out there now that are doing blogs, and mm-hmm. the information they're providing, pictures are pictures. They tell a story. But when you add the commentary from a person who is really not an authority, it can really screw things up. And for the PIOs trying to diffuse that, it's a negative effort. And so our focus has been to let the PIOs know that you have to get out there, you have to be the media's best credible source of information, and you've got to be there consistently. You can't just provide it first thing and then disappear. It's you've got to be accessible, and your information has to be accessible. It used to be, and Barbara, you said it best, that we used to get our news once a day, usually right. the evening news.
Mm-hmm.
Well, same thing on a major incident, especially a wildland incident. Typically, we provide information first thing in the morning because we get a briefing from the troops coming back in, and then in the evening.
Right.
Was another briefing, and here's this huge gap in
between. That's not enough. Yeah.
Where there was nothing, and it was frustrating to all of us. Mm-hmm. I know my time on one of the National Incident Management Teams, we had an incident commander who was very progressive, and he put a third operations officer on the team. So you had a day and a night, and then you had this transition ops. Well, their focus was to get information and bring it back to the information officers, and that was huge. I mean, it solved part of the problem. But now you've got morning, there's nothing till noon, and then there's nothing again till evening. The public wants it.
Yeah.
Continually.
Isn't the JIC going to solve some of that as well? I mean, that...
The JIC operations, I think, are going to help unify the effort and centralize the information coming in, and it'll be able to be dispersed more readily. It's not going to solve every problem. Getting the information from the field and getting it back to that center is still going to be the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, Barbara, on your side of the street, these incidents break. What is it that your news directors want? I mean, I think there's a misconception that there's this nasty old guy up in this tower someplace that wants you to go out and find somebody to saber rattle with. That's not really the case, though.
No. We want to make sure we have the information and that it's credible.
Mm-hmm.
That's my main goal, is to make sure that I have the who, what, where, when, why, and how, and that it's from someone who really knows what they're talking about. They're not just talking out of the side of their mouth and just giving me whatever. I want to know that it's the truth, or the truth as close as they know it.
So when you've covered large fires and earthquakes and what have
yes.
you, what are some of the frustrations that you have on your side of the street that maybe the agencies could better address?
Most of it just comes from too many people in one place at one time. You know, you get to these major incidents and you know, you're vying with 50, 75 people who are trying mm-hmm. to get the same thing you are. And there's, you know, one or two PIOs, and they're doing the best they can.
There's only so much.
Yeah, there's only so much they can do. So you get what you can. You get, you know, hopefully they do a briefing at a podium or something, and you know, you can use that, and hopefully you'll get a one-on-one interview, and sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you can find someone else. But it just really depends on what's going on and what the incident is.
Now, it seems like there's a little bulldozing that goes on in the media world, too. And we saw this during some of our big fires where you have local media, and then suddenly you have LA media, and then suddenly you have the media.
And they feel like they're the king of the hill.
Oh, yeah. When the SAT trucks come in and you got to figure out logistically where you're just parking media vehicles, you now have an incident within an incident.
Yeah.
And I know we saw that up on the Gap fire with mm-hmm. CNN in particular because they camped up there. And so they started looking for things to report.
Yeah.
And that becomes a problem.
When they're just wandering around by themselves.
Well, yeah, looking for trouble. Uh-huh. And I know that's part of the PIO's function, isn't it, Charlie?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mike, you just hit on probably one of the most complex issues. When you look at a public safety information officer, they have so many different things that they're trying to do, so many beasts that they're trying to feed. The media is one. The public is another. And we use the media. They're a conduit to the masses. I mean, that's the best way for us to get mass information out in a hurry. And we have to use all the media that are available. But we also have this one-on-one contact that we need to have with the public.
Mm-hmm.
We need to keep communities involved. And so we're having to do a multifaceted approach. We set up trap lines where we go out and post information in various communities. You also have all these incident personnel that are out there fighting the battle, whatever it is. They don't have a clue what's going on in the world. So we need to feed them and provide them information about what's going on in the world because they're so focused on this little micro area. It's a huge mm-hmm. challenge. I mean, it's not just dealing with the media. You've got the public and different special interest groups out there you have to address.
Well, that raises the question of who's the media anymore. I mean, from the media's point of view, the professional career journalist media, what do you view as the media?
I view radio, television, and some internet.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are internet, like our internet, where we do a news-based internet site. And then there's the blog type of internet that you're talking about, and that I don't consider media. I consider people who could get a credential press pass media, I guess. Mm-hmm. Someone who actually has gone to journalism school and knows what they're supposed to be doing and how to act in a situation like that. Because you've got people who are just coming in there, you know, with their little cameras thinking, oh, I've got a camera, I'm the media. And they're really not.
Well, and that's raised a lot of questions for the, particularly
She's
the fire service.
Open up a can of worms.
Yeah, well, it's our specialty
we'll
here at Community
Alert. We'll have to talk about that.
Thank you.
Well, it's what defines media, and it's important, mm-hmm. For access. Who
right.
has access to the incident? And then the other issue is where's the credibility and all that? And we touch on this when we come back. This has been Community Alert, visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Charlie Johnson, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and Richard Dugan on the board. Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Fire Department Network News TV, FDNNTV.com, and Charlie Johnson, former PIO with Santa Barbara County Fire, presently with Carpinteria-Summerlin Fire, and talking about the interfaces between the agencies and the news networks, and it's a fascinating chat.
Well, we're talking about media, and what is the media? It has a legal definition. It has a union definition. It has our own perception of definition, and it's gotten very frustrating because who is the PIO really supposed to talk to? Just anybody that walks up with a self-generated press pass? Or does it have to be somebody that has a call sign or somebody that represents a bona fide advertising type newspaper? What's the media anymore?
I'm waiting for somebody to tell me what the media is.
It's a free-for-all, I think.
Well, how does the professional media, and I'm talking about the radio stations, television, I mean the newspapers, how do they feel about what's happening here and the dilution of the media definition?
Well, I can't tell you how they feel, but how I feel is sometimes it's a scrum. You know, it's like in a rugby match. But I think the definition, the lines have blurred, and you don't really know who's what anymore. You can go to a press conference, and you'll see people with, you know, the expensive television cameras, the old ENGs mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, the big cameras, the HD and all that, and you'll see somebody who looks like they're shooting for their high school.
Right.
So you never know who's who, and they're all standing there with their tripods in a line.
Doesn't this get frustrating for the true career professionals?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it dilutes. I mean, people have gone to school, they've gotten licensed, they've joined unions, they do all these things to be mm-hmm. professional, and you've got people just walking in.
Right. And another problem that I see within the media itself is that these people that are just walking in are getting jobs because they're undercutting the people who are professional, and they end up, you know, possibly getting a gig that someone else more qualified
financially
could get.
Undercutting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We asked that the other day with the NBC folks. I said, has mediocrity become a standard that's acceptable? And I think the answer to that was absolutely yes, because nobody's willing to pay to maintain a high standard where we would used to have seen things. As long as the content is validated in some form and it's reasonably well put together, and you can do that fairly easily now with the new programs that are out there, either for video or audio.
I knew someone who was in a management position who basically said, I just want a warm body in the chair.
And that's cheap.
Yeah.
Now,
wow.
If you want a warm body that's competent, knows what they're talking about.
Well, that was what I asked. I said, don't you want someone who's competent? And he just kind of looked at me. And it's sad. It's very sad because it's a business I completely adore, and I don't like seeing it. Mm-hmm. go down the drain.
So this translates then to the public, which is what we're talking about, and overall is the public's need for information.
Well, and they're obviously accepting the mediocrity.
And that's an important component. Is that something that the public as a whole is content with? I don't think so, not based on the complaints that certainly Charlie and I have been hearing over the years.
Yeah. Well, I never hear the complaints, but I wish I did. It would make me feel better.
Well, there's fewer and fewer people out there that are watching one particular kind of media. They're watching all different sorts of things.
In all different places, too. Yeah. I mean, you've got your people with the home computers. You've got the cell phones and the Blackberries and everything else that people are getting it. You know, there's an awful lot of good quality video that's showing up. Just take a look at the plane into the, was it Potomac River?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there was some great home video on that. Now, was it as good as Hollywood quality? No, but it was shot, it was immediate, it was original. And they're going to run with that every time.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Well, it's also kind of edgy. And yeah. It's got some excitement to it, and that's kind of cool.
The YouTube quality.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
But,
and that's what we're competing with.
Uh-huh.
Well, you see, now that YouTube is bringing up the editing capability so that you can take your YouTube film and edit it right there and put it on an edited version, which means that obviously there's a tremendous amount of use there.
Well, I think it's obviously the future, and this is where everything's going to go. Now, how does anybody make any money at it so that they can have any quality to it, so that the public as a whole can have any trust in it? That's really going to be the battle, I think, that we're looking at, because who's the media is now being further defined by the quality of what it is. And does a blog really going to measure up to the same thing as a major newspaper, the New York Times, LA Times, whatever?
Well, I think that there's going to have to be something that happens where that when you're putting out information that the public is going to act on for a public safety situation, that's going to be different than the information that you get when you go to YouTube to watch a clip of somebody jumping over a school bus with a skateboard or something like that. And somehow or other, somewhere there has to be that differentiation. And I think that then you're going to have some accreditation that goes with the people that are doing that sort of work.
Yeah, because sometimes I've noticed some blogs, you look at them and they have all these little signs and symbols and badges and what have you, and you're not even sure if it's a blog or if it's an actual site. If it's not your city or town, you can look at it and go, is this their website? Because you're not sure.
Well, and going back to the National Incident Management Teams, one of the things that we had to do, and this just shows you where technology has gone, we had two information officers on every team. And then our team was one of the first ones to bring a computer wizard on, somebody to get the computers up and networked. And then the next thing you knew, we had somebody who was skilled at getting video up and on and creating a website for a specific incident. Those were all very good things. Well, now we've had to add another element to that, and that is a young person, typically somebody in the 17, 18-year age range, to go and find all the sites that are posting information so that we can see what's being said. We have to do that to do rumor control.
Well, NBC is doing that now.
I actually got some really good information off of a site for the station fire. They put up their own Facebook website for the station fire, and it was amazingly accurate and very well done. And it was done by someone in authority. I can't say. I don't really know
who. But that's what they're having to do. And at the same time that they're trying to construct that to serve the public better, they're having this other person that's going out there and accessing the internet, finding where all the information is coming from and reporting back. You know, here's some bogus stuff that's going out. What do you want to do about it? Well, instead of challenging it, what we do is then provide them the same detailed information we've been providing everybody else, but you have to find where that site is in order to get it to them.
But I found with that site, it helped the PIOs because I didn't have to call them or talk to them as much. I could get the information right there, and I could look at it as compared to InsaWeb and see, you know, if it was...
As long as it was being done by a professional and somebody who can validate what it is, you know, that's reality. That's where we are.
Yeah.
But, you know, you almost have created a second assignment for somebody. Somebody has to go out and police all the information that's out there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We've had to hire young college-age kids on a part-time basis to go in and find these sites so that we can
do
something.
Because they're the most conversant with the systems.
I didn't grow up with computers, so I'm computer challenged. But you find a 17, 18-year-old. What they can do with their cell phone, I couldn't do with my home computer.
But meanwhile, back at the ranch, the Cleavers want to know what's happening with the fire and do they have to leave. And behind the scenes, there's all this dynamics that we've been talking about for the last hour that just complicates the process of telling people, yeah, it's time to leave or it's not time to leave, which I suppose reinforces the ready, set, go concept. If don't sit around waiting for somebody to tell you to leave.
Look,
if you think
window.
It's time to leave, pack up and leave.
Well, I hope that's the
advice
we're providing, is that people aren't waiting to be told. Hopefully they're they're becoming knowledgeable enough now that they can make those decisions.
But we know that they are waiting. We've seen that with the first 911. We saw that. We even saw during when Ted and I did the Hayes-Aceta fire broadcast that people were calling up, should I leave? Should I this? Should I that? Those are all decisions that you're going to have to make on your own.
Common sense counts for something.
Yeah, if you're looking at my tail lights,
that's right.
You're doing the wrong thing.
I mean, there was a time here we were wondering if we were going to leave the radio station. So, I mean, it was an interesting day. But we learned a lot. And I think for all PIOs, if they could spend some time in a radio station or in a television station and find out what it's like to be on the distribution side, they would learn a lot about what they need to do for their job. At least they'd probably actually be more comfortable in their job having been on the other side of the mic. We learned a lot. I don't know, Barbara, would you agree?
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not out there to hurt you or to do anything to jeopardize your job or my job. I just want to get the information out there.
Yeah, that's what we're teaching.
Well, we're down to the last break here. Barbara Brooks with FDNNTV.com, Charlie Johnson, Carp Summerlin, PIO, former PIO with Santa Barbara County Fire, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the board. This is Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster. KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Folks, welcome back to our final segment. This is Ted Adams, Community Alert, Mike Williams, co-host. We're visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Fire Department Network News, FDNNTV.com, and Charlie Johnson with Carp Summerlin Fire and former PIO for Santa Barbara County Fire. And we're deep in the interchange between...
Well, we're coming up to the end of the show. Barbara, tell us a little bit about FDNNTV.com and what you guys are doing down there.
FDNNTV.com is an internet site. We do news for and about firefighters. And so it's there's a video component to it, and there's also a text component. Mm-hmm. So you will see videos from Southern California, New York. Soon they're going to be in Baltimore at Firehouse Expo. And it's all different kinds of stories that have to do with firefighting, whether it be about training or about equipment or events that have happened. There are all sorts of different firefighting-related videos and stories. And then there are text stories from all over the country.
Now, these are free and they're open to the public?
Yes, it's open to the public. There's no charge for it. All you have to do is log on to the site, and you can look all over and find all sorts of information. And there's also a search there if you want to look up stories about canines or about a certain type of training or anything like that. You can put in a word and search for stories about that.
So how many do you have in file now? How many different stories? It's quite a bit, isn't it?
Oh, I have no idea. The site's been up for about a year and a half, so I'd say hundreds.
It's fairly substantial.
All archived. Yes, it's all archived. Everything is there for, from day one. You can find anything, text or video, that's been on the site. It's all archived.
And you can put a name in there of some individual, and they'll bring up whatever it is. About
yeah, like there. if you want to put in Mike Williams, you could put it in, and you would see a video story I did at your casino night.
Right.
And you'd see all sorts of things.
Okay, well that's cool. That's a great feature, and I would encourage people to go over to that website fdnntv.com and look around. I think you'd be surprised what the fire service is really all about, and from all over the country, not just here in Santa Barbara.
Correct.
So, Charlie, what's going on in Carp Summerlin before we go? Anything new and exciting?
Well, Mike, we've been working with County OES on the JIC training and getting ready for the new EOC building when it opens up to make sure that we've got people up and trained. And we're doing a little bit of role clarification between what happens in the field and what happens in the Emergency Operations Center. So.
And that's a different need.
It's a different need, and it's, again, it's bringing everybody under one roof so that we all are feeding the same beast and getting the information out in a timely fashion.
Well, it's going to be challenging, but having a joint information center will be certainly a step in the right direction. At least we'll have a hub that we can all work from. Both delivering in and taking out from. So, anyway, well, we've been visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Fire Department Network News, also known as FDNNTV.com. Encourage you to take a look at that. Of course, Charlie Johnson, our first original guest for Community Alert, been with us several times, PIO with Carp Summerlin Fire Protection District, and also former PIO, retired captain, Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and thank you, Richard, and thank you, everyone here from the film crew, for all your help today. We very much appreciate it. It's made for an interesting show. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. This has been Community Alert, visiting today with Barbara Brooks, Fire Department Network News, also FDNNTV.com. Encourage folks to take some time out and go look at that website. Lots of interesting, fascinating things in there. And Charlie Johnson, Public Information Officer with the Carpinteria Summerlin Fire Protection District. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan. This has been Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll see you next week.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orfala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.
If a fire breaks out in your home, do you know how you'll get out? I'm California Acting State Fire Marshal Tanya Hoover. Planning and practicing how you and your family would escape a fire safely can make all the difference for your safety in an emergency. Plan two routes of escape from every room and designate a meeting place outside of your home. Remember, get out and stay out. For more fire safety information, visit our website at fire.ca.gov or contact your local fire department.